Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
At age 10, I spoke up. I said, no, I'm a girl.
Welcome, 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 you beautiful people, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie, and I am your very queer host. And you, my friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is to uplift, highlight, celebrate, and normalize LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. This episode does just that. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Wendy Cole, and I'm going to tell you about Wendy in a second. Before I tell you about Wendy, oh my God, it's so good, y'all. It's so good. But before I talk to you a little bit about Wendy, I want to talk to you about our newest Patreon members. Yes, bechas. Give it up for Ashlyn Sepulveda. I hope I said that right, Ashlyn Sepulveda. I like saying Sepulveda, though. And Caroline DiBernardi-Luft. Caroline DiBernardi-Luft. How come we all have such fun names? And I don't feel like I have one of those. I feel like I need to change my name. I guess I could, in the name of the queer community, I can change my name if I want to. Do whatever I want. I'm just kidding. Listen, thank you, thank you, thank you for becoming Patreon members. You too, my friends, can become a Patreon member for as low as $2 a month. And I've started a new thing, y'all, in the name of community. Every second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Eastern time, I'm doing something I'm calling Queers and Cheers, where we all grab a cocktail of choice and we sit down and we click a little Zoom link that I've created and we get together and shoot the shiz and we are forming community. And it's really fun. You'll get some behind the scenes stuff from me. We'll chat. We'll get to know each other. I want to get to know all of you. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, we play games. I don't know. Sky's the limit here, folks. And my wife, Anne, might even make an appearance if we're lucky. I know. Everybody wants Anne. Nobody wants me. I understand. And I'm working on her to be at the Zooms. And I think she's going to make appearances. So there you go. Plus my kids, probably, because can't keep them out. So anyway, go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast if you'd like to be a member of the community over there. And now let me just get into it because I want to get you right into this interview because when I say that it touched me, I'm not kidding, y'all. This chat with Wendy really, really resonated me. And you'll see if you're watching the video, you know, usually I'm cracking jokes. I'm laughing a lot. This whole time I'm like, oh, Wendy. Like it's really like it touched me. When I tell you Wendy had a journey, she had a journey to becoming who she is. So Wendy is a transition coach and she helps her clients identify, explore, eliminate the stress of facing life's challenges. And she knows a lot about that because she, my friends, transitioned genders at the age of 67. Yes, you heard that right, 67. And the journey to get there, it's a lot. It was a lot. And I think about her a lot now. And she's using her powers now to help others through any kind of transition. So it's really beautiful. It's a really great story. Something she said that resonated with me during the interview was gender is between the ears. It's not between the legs. And that actually follows through for many things in life, if we really think about it. Oh my God, it was just a beautiful conversation. She was super open and candid about everything. You know, I make it a point to not ask people about their bodies, about anything they want done to their bodies. You know what? All of that is off the table. But Wendy was like, let's talk about sex and let's talk about my surgery. You know, so she was really an open book and I found it really refreshing. It let her story be a case for the real true need for allowing people and allowing ourselves to really be our true authentic selves. Because her journey to happiness was a really long one. And I just want you to hear it for yourself. It's really beautiful. So I hope you enjoy Wendy's story and everything. If you want to get in touch with Wendy, it's all in the show notes. So check it all out. Without further ado, yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. I have to tell you. Wait. I'm sorry, Wendy, and everybody wants to hear her story. I have to tell y'all, we won another award. We won an Anthem Award We won an Anthem Award in the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion category. We won for Best Podcast, the Silver Award. Bum, bum, bum. I'm so proud. I'm so happy. Thank you, Anthem Awards. Thank you, everybody who continues to tune in. Like, I feel like I'm giving an award speech, like I'm at the Grammys. It just feels awesome. And now I will have another award to add to my beautiful award shelf that is behind me in the video, if you're watching the video on Spotify or YouTube. So go make sure you are subscribed to Spotify for sure, and YouTube if you want to, and watch out for trolls over there. I'm working on getting rid of them, but it's a big job. Listen, I'm so excited. I'm so happy. And watch the videos, reach out to me, come be on the show, come tell me your thoughts, and come be a member of the Patreon community. And without further ado, it's time to roll that tape so you can hear Wendy's inspiring and cautionary tale. It's beautiful. Helen, Beulah, my fake assistants who don't really exist, and Nicole, who tells them what to do and actually makes things happen. Please roll that tape. Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you doing, Jamie?
I am so good. I am really excited to be talking with you today, and I can't wait to hear your whole story.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm just going to do this. We're going to go right into the elevator pitch. So I'm going to get my timer up, and we're going to do it. We're going to do the elevator pitch. Are you ready?
Ready.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I'm Wendy Cole, and I help people untangle their perplexing mindset from abuse, trauma, and difficult life transitions. I began doing my work with people in the transgender community, going from male to female, which also parallels my story. And I appreciate being here today.
Oh my God, that was beautifully done. I'm really excited to kind of dig in and hear your whole story, Wendy. So
Okay. Can
we just take it before Wendy was helping people and changing the world for the better, let's take it to Wendy in Wendy's youth and
Okay. Just
kind of, you know, who you were when you started out and how you got to where you are now. We're just going to take it back.
Okay. Way back. I'll go back to age 3. I knew there was something very different about me, you know, things that I liked and things I was comfortable with. I couldn't put words around gender at that time. Mm-hmm. All I knew was that most of my mother's friends had daughters, and I thoroughly enjoyed playing with the other girls. The little boys, they were kind of rough and I didn't quite like it. I liked playing with the girls. I had no clue what was going on. My favorite toy, and I don't know where a dolly came from, but I had a doll.
Oh.
And Dolly was my favorite. That was my first negative gender experience.
Oh, no.
My father came home from work one night and took Dolly away from me.
Oh.
I screamed and I got spanked.
Oh, God.
And I got spanked until I stopped screaming and I was handed Teddy. Oh. I didn't want Teddy. I wanted my Dolly back. Well, that was my father. Basically, no little boy is going to play with a doll.
Right.
I didn't understand that, but that was mm-hmm. it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Fishkill, New York. I was actually born in Jacksonville, Texas, which is where my mother grew up and lived, East Texas farm. And she met my father during World War II. When he was stationed in Houston, Texas, and he was a lieutenant commander in the Navy inspecting oil tankers for naval fleets. He had an affair with my mother. And one thing led to another, and he left his first wife and family.
Oh, and this was like shortly after the war or during the war?
Well, I guess they started dating during the war, but 1948 was when I was born in Jacksonville, Texas. I was there for 3 months, and I'm kind of grateful I got moved to New York State instead.
You still went through some stuff, even living in New York, which I think we're going to hear more of. Yeah.
I was being socialized as a boy, not a girl.
Right.
And I knew that was wrong. That was not how I felt. I was convinced by age 5, I was a girl.
Wow. Yeah.
But I knew also enough that that was wrong. in terms of my parents' world and society in general. And at the time, I didn't know that gender is between your ears, not between your legs.
Right. Ooh, I love that. I love that. Yes, gender's between your ears.
It was how I was born. And I've since done some research into that. And there is a section of the brain that develops more prominently in females and is more dormant in males.
Huh. What is that section?
I'm not sure what it is, and it's some little obscure section of the brain that they've identified as different between the two genders.
Hmm.
I probably have that section of my brain very well developed. My brain went female in the second trimester, and my body went male.
Right.
Mixed signals. Right. By age 10, I would dress up in whatever clothes I could find that would fit me. Do my makeup, because I have always observed my mother doing her makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I did makeup, nails, dressed up, and waited for my mother to come home from grocery shopping and tell her that I was a girl.
Wow. Okay.
That was in the late 1950s.
Oh,
so man. You can imagine how well that went over.
Not so well, huh?
No. My parents took me to a psychiatric center just south of Beacon, New York, on the Hudson River. The Craig House. People from New York City went there for various things too. So it was well known. That was the first time I ever heard a psychiatrist telling my parents, oh, this is just a little transvestism, boys experiment. He's too young to diagnose as transsexual. This will all pass. And I'll never forget this. He said to my parents, as soon as he has a wife, a career, a house and a family, he'll forget all about being a girl. At age 10, I spoke up. I said, no, I'm a girl. That got me taken out of the office with the doctor. He spent the rest of the time talking to my parents.
Oh, wow.
It was after our fourth or fifth visit there, I was informed on the way home by my mother that I needed to stop insisting that I was a girl, forget all about this. Otherwise, I would be committed and fixed. And that scared the hell out of me. And
I'm going to cry.
That began my life of repressing how I felt. And it also changed the way I just interacted with the world, because I had this huge secret to hide. It was just all consuming. Just put yourself in that situation where, you know, you question your gender from the moment you're up to the moment you go back to bed. And you look at yourself in the mirror and you really see a guy. You're told by everybody else, you're a girl.
Right.
That's a very tough one. And not many people understand that perspective of it. But that's what I was facing all the way through my teens and into my early 20s.
Every day.
I didn't date in high school much at all because I was afraid girls would figure me out. In later life, I was afraid of gay men because I figured they might figure me out.
Right. Jig is up.
You know, things like I was more comfortable being in the kitchen with the women on Thanksgiving than hanging out in the living room watching football with the guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
1970, that was my senior year of college. I'd gone to an all men's college trying to force myself to fit in, which, you know, you can see how well that worked out.
That must have been real fun, huh, Wendy?
Uh-huh. This was 1970, New York State. I want to transition. I was living off campus, so I found a psychiatrist that said he would help me.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he wanted me to start doing is coming out to my friends. Well, I wasn't about to do that with anyone on campus.
No, right.
But in private, in my own apartment where I was living at the time, he wanted me to come out to my neighbors, come out to my local town friends.
Yeah.
And I started doing that. I was underway. It took me to a quarterly meeting of a group of psychiatrists from the Tri-City area. It took me to a quarterly meeting where case patients get reviewed by other psychiatrists. So I walk into this hospital conference room. There's about 15 to 20 psychiatrists in there. Most of them were men except for one woman. Uh-huh. So I sat there and I started talking and telling how I felt and how I was living and that I'm working on becoming a woman, a girl, full time.
Yeah.
And one of the psychiatrists stands up, looks around the room, says, I'll see you all next quarter, looks at me and goes, you're a freak. You should move to New York City and turn tricks like the rest of them. I'll never forget that.
What?
Yeah.
What?
That was from an MD psychiatrist. It basically broke up the meeting. I was crushed.
Was this just a hoax? Was this not, or did your doctor really think that these all this group of psychiatrists would be there to help you and guide you?
That's what he assumed.
Yeah, okay.
But that was not the case by any stretch of the imagination.
Ugh. And so this doctor was not the only one.
No.
Who?
At my next session with him, that was when I found out that the way I was born was considered at that time by the medical community, psychiatrists, therapists, all of that, to be a psychological condition with no treatment and no cure. So basically that ended my work with the psychiatrist. That ended everything that I attempted to do. My parents, of course, found out about it, and my father went ballistic.
Oh, no, Wendy.
I was 22, but I was still, you know, in college and pretty dependent on them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that this was some condition that I could never get any medical help for or any assistance with. And I also found out from my psychiatrist that, you know, basically, if this is a psychological condition, no treatment, no cure. And so therefore, anything I did would have to be totally on my own. I did a little bit of looking into it, and it was pretty much what that doctor had said to me. I only had two choices, move to San Francisco or move to Manhattan.
Right.
And turn live tricks. Underground.
Right.
I could do this and never become part of society. So, and I've talked to several, quite a few people since starting to do my work. And there's a lot of people out there that were like me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They chose not to do anything about it because that's how you would have to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to one other woman, she said she envied me because she transitioned in 1978. And she said she described it as going from one closet where she was totally hidden behind her male facsimile, which is what I call my previous life, went from one closet to another closet where she couldn't tell anybody about her past. So here's your personal identity, and you have to change pronouns and genders when you're talking about your past. And you want to do that. It's a juggling act. And what I decided to do personally is I don't do that. If I'm friends with somebody, then I tell them all about my past and what I experience. So it's all out there. There's nothing hidden. I can go about my daily life as any other woman blending into society without any problems whatsoever.
Yeah.
That was my dream. That was my goal. And I can do that.
Yeah. But it took you a long journey to get there.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, you didn't decide to transition. In that moment, you chose the other option, which was to
repress.
Yes.
And hide.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. I figured, what the heck? I'm going to try. They said, have a career. Have a wife, house, and family. I knew it was bull.
Yeah.
But I tried it.
You tried it.
And 4 years in, I found it didn't work.
Oh, so you did the thing. You found a career. You found a wife.
Oh, yeah. I had a good career in tech.
And then
it was a long one, too.
So what didn't work? What do you mean it didn't work?
4 years in, I was stressed to the max. I hated my life. I hated everything about it. And there was nothing I could do.
You were stuck.
I knew my options of doing anything about how I felt about who I was. I had no options. It was still a psychological condition.
Yeah. So you just repressed.
Right. And it finally popped out. You can't hold this in, especially from a spouse, successfully for a long period of time.
Right.
It's too powerful. At least it was for me. And it popped out in my sleep.
What do you mean?
I was talking in my sleep about being a woman.
Oh, wow.
And my wife demanded an explanation. At that point, I just decided to hell with it. I'll just tell her everything. And I did. Figuring we'd be divorced by morning.
Yeah, because you're like still in your 20s at this point.
I was late 20s, early 30s at that point.
All right. So it's like 70s, 80s.
Yeah, around. It was in the late 70s.
So what happened?
She told me the following morning that as long as I didn't do anything about this, that we would stay together. I didn't inquire as to any details whatsoever. I just accepted that would be what it is. So,
yeah, okay.
About a couple of weeks later, she said to me, you know, maybe to relieve the stress of this and everything, you can cross-dress.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I tried it. Jamie, I ended up hating it.
Hating cross-dressing. Hating.
Yeah. Because it wasn't about the clothes. It wasn't about the makeup. It wasn't about how I looked. It was how I felt. And every time I cross-dressed, I would have to take everything off, which was a complete reminder of what I couldn't be.
Oh, wow. That's an important point.
And I've since turned that around into this phrase. It should be about less about transitioning and more about correcting a condition you're born with so you can be who you've always been.
That's deep.
I'm friends with a group of ladies online, or basically a little bit around the country and predominantly in the New England area. And they've all come to the realization, Wendy, you were never a man. You were hiding behind my male facsimile, my male representative. And that's the case for so many of us.
Yeah. And the way you explain it is great because it really puts it into perspective for those of us who haven't experienced this. And, you know, I love that. So let's flash forward a bit. So you stayed in this life. You cross-dressing wasn't working for you, but you still stayed in this life. You still repressed. You had some children, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So let's take it down the road a bit.
We had two children, son and daughter. My son wound up committing suicide.
I'm so sorry.
And was heavily into drugs. He had a lot of problems. I wasn't one of the best parents. And I totally own that. I tried, but I just couldn't make it work. And especially with a child that had so many issues too. I bought season tickets to basketball, baseball, trying to connect and make it work. That didn't help. There was no communication whatsoever. I couldn't get a communication thing going. And my daughter basically says at times that she raised herself.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were so focused on our son. So it's struggles that people have with families. It had it with us as well. The sad part of it was, is I wasn't present really as a parent because of this.
Right.
I was
angry. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
I was angry. I was depressed. Significant anxiety. Everything from all of this. My wife had suggested by the 90s that I see a psychiatrist and get medications for how I felt. We both knew this was the underlying condition for it. But to make it work, go see a psychiatrist. Only this time I won't tell him what the underlying causes are. I made up things around work, around family, anxieties, depression. And what I found was they're all too happy to, you know, take a short visit with you and fill a prescription pad full of meds and off you go. And that's how I lived from the early 90s all the way through to 2015.
Oh, my goodness.
I was living in a fog as far as emotions and everything else go.
Right.
And I was not social, but my job made it very easy because I was in technology. And I would go into corporations and design systems for them and implement them and manage the project and all of that. So all I had to do was deal with other techie people.
Right.
There was no socializing whatsoever. If my wife had a Christmas party or some event for the family and invited in friends and all of that, I would do my bit of cleaning up the house and doing whatever I was supposed to do. And when the party started, I'd, you know, make a token appearance for about 20 minutes and then vanish. I didn't want to be social. I had a secret to hide. And so I lived like that from 1970 to 2015. That's 45 years.
Wow, Wendy. Oof. The trauma, just the... So what happened? How do we get to the beautiful, beautiful person who's sitting in front of me and speaking so eloquently? And like, how did you get here?
At various stages, I went into some very dark places and had suicidal ideations and all of that. Yeah. In late 2014, it was really bad. I had everything set up to kill myself. And I decided, well, I have no idea if it's possible or what's changed, if anything, but that was the first time, late 2014, I went online to check.
The first time?
The first time.
Since
I wouldn't let myself look or do anything about this because I felt like I was just locked in to the path that I was on. I found out it had been changed in 2012. From 1970, it took till 2012 for my diagnosis to change.
Wow. Wow, that was the first change. Holy moly.
That's when being born transgender is now considered to be a condition you're born with, and it's treatable by therapy, hormone therapy, and any necessary surgeries.
Life-saving.
Yeah. And that was huge. I read that. I didn't even hesitate. Jamie, I went upstairs. I said to my wife, remember what we talked about in 1978? Well, it's back. And, you know, the bottom line is I'm going to do something. I need to go see a therapist. In January, I found a therapist. I went through a lot of writing to different clinics and everything else. And I had two therapists at one clinic in a town near me that were interested in working with me. I chose Stephanie. The vibe I got from her brochure, her picture, her eyes, I just got a vibe from her. And the first therapy session, this is the power of acceptance. My first therapy session, I hadn't talked to anybody about how I felt, Jamie. Oh, God, since 1970, 45 years.
Oh, my goodness.
It stayed bottled up in me.
Yeah.
And that first session was an intake session, so it was a little bit longer, and I just poured my guts out. What was really powerful from that day, and has stayed with me ever since, is she's sitting there looking up at me with my file folder on her lap, and I'm getting ready to walk out the door, and she looks at me and she goes, what's your name?
Oh.
I immediately snap back, Wendy. And to my joy, amazement, she crossed out my male representative's name. And wrote Wendy on my file. And from that day forward, I was Wendy.
Did Wendy just come to you in the moment, or was Wendy in there?
I picked that name in grammar school.
Oh, wow.
I've carried that with me ever since. If I could ever, ever do anything about how I feel and who I am, really, I'm naming her Wendy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. I'm getting chills. You're going to make me cry. This is too much, Wendy. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Okay. All right. So Wendy was finally unleashed on the world.
Exactly. She was the first of what has turned out to be many people who accept me for who I am and what I am.
I love that.
And it took me 67 years to get to that because I transitioned at age 67. It's never too late.
I love that. Say that again, Wendy.
It's never too late. If there's something you need to do, do it.
Yes. Yes. So Stephanie was her name, correct?
Right. She was.
So you meet Stephanie, you get on the path.
Right.
And what happens?
What I did in the first 6 months of therapy, because keep in mind, I haven't cross-dressed in over 35 years. I haven't done anything. So in that first 6 months of therapy from January to June, I focused on me. Stephanie got me back into my 60s hippie days with meditations, mindfulness.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I started adding into it with visioning and making that work for me. So on my second session with her, I told her, I'm going to come next week as Wendy. And she said, you can come any way you wish. It's a safe environment, not a problem. And I said to her, I said, you realize I'm going to have to start working on boundaries with my wife at the time because we're still together. We have this rule. Wendy doesn't go out of the house when she cross-dresses. That was another thing that I just hated about the whole thing. So we argued that week, discussed it, all of that. But I was determined with the visioning that I was learning to do, I would envision what it would feel like, not be like, but feel like to me, to get in the car, back out of the garage, drive the 7 or 8 miles to therapy. Get out of the car. What would it feel like on a late January day, walking across the parking lot, the sound of my shoes on the pavement, the wind blowing around my legs? How would I feel about seeing my reflection in the glass door going into the building? And the actual experience was even better. And I wasn't nervous. Because I had done all that work in advance of envisioning it, being in the moment, and being centered and aligned with my inner being. And I went in. I found out, and the same experience happened with a new psychiatrist that Stephanie sent me to. They both met my male facsimile first. And then they met Wendy. And my psychiatrist and Stephanie knew each other. Apparently, they had a conversation about the experience of meeting Wendy. They couldn't get over the personality change.
Oh, wow.
I was finally me.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I was getting happy. The psychiatrist took me off all those meds that I was on that I didn't need them anymore. Never really needed them to begin with. I just needed to be me and be happy.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That your whole life being somebody else, your whole life.
Exactly.
And what could have happened had you been allowed to be yourself from the start?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the first things I tackled in therapy within the first 2 weeks was regrets. That's something I can't do anything about. You can't go back in time. You can only go forward. So my focus was going forward and being me. And just what could have been, we'll never know. I do believe very much that if I hadn't been so busy repressing all of this stuff, and so angry and so depressed and everything, I would have done far better and been a much different person. When I have the opportunity to talk to parents of transgender kids, mm-hmm. use my life as an example of what not to do. One of the things that I tell parents is really embrace your child. And I use the word child not to denote age, but the relationship. I don't care if they're 45 or 15.
Yeah.
Embrace your child, accept them, and absolutely don't put it on yourself to understand.
Right. I love that. Yes. Yes.
Because that's not acceptance. That's conditional.
Yes.
You don't need to understand. This is just who they are. And the other thing is parents have got to get over with this is they didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Right.
This is not something that they caused. This is how your child was born.
Right. And they've always been the same person.
Exactly.
Regardless of telling you they're trans or not, they're still the same exact person.
Right.
That they've always been, right?
Right. If your son says he's a girl, then believe him.
Yeah.
Do you realize how scary that is to tell your parent?
Oh.
It was for me.
Yeah.
I like to say that, you know, I do help people going through difficult life transitions. Doing what I did is nothing more than what someone else is going to experience emotionally, changing complete careers, moving right. across the country to do it. It's the same methodology, the same thing of how to deal with that and deal with this. This is just probably a little bit more profound of a life change, changing gender, changing sex, changing everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always dreamed of having the surgery.
Yeah.
In the 1950s, my parents were hysterical over me and thinking of Christine Jorgensen, who was very public in the 50s after the war and everything. She came back as herself.
Yeah.
And when I discovered her, how am I going to get to Denmark to get the surgery?
Right, right, right.
I finally went to NYU Medical Center, Dr. Rachel Bluban, wonderful, wonderful, excellent surgeon. I had the most wonderful experience there. 5 days in the hospital, my friend came to pick me up. I navigated in the car while we drove across Manhattan in rush hour. And he drove me back to New Hope, Pennsylvania, where I had my apartment. 7 days after surgery, I was walking through town and hanging out at one of the local places talking with people.
That's wonderful.
I went back for, I think it was my second follow-up visit, and I come out of Penn Station, walk across 7th Avenue and down 30th Street. And somewhere between 5th and 6th Avenue, there's this long stretch of black plate glass storefront, highly reflective. Jamie, I'm standing there in the middle of a Manhattan street, people walking by, staring at my reflection in the window going, holy shit, you finally did it.
Oh my God, I could cry. Oh my God, that's amazing. You know what I'm thinking of? The Mary Tyler Moore Show, when she throws her hat.
Yeah,
that's how
exactly.
I feel, that, like that kind of moment. You're gonna make it after all. Like, it's so life-changing, life-saving.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because when I got back to my apartment in Pennsylvania after surgery, one of my favorite bartenders had sent me flowers. And Stephanie sent me flowers.
Stephanie.
And there was the Mary Tyler thing in there.
How funny is that?
Yeah,
oh my
so
God.
You mentioned that. That reminded me. Yeah.
She
goes, you've arrived, girl.
You've arrived. You did it. Yeah. Oh my God, I love this. Can I ask what happened with your marriage and your daughter as well?
It was late February of 2015. I said to her, well, I'm going to start hormone replacement therapy. They give you the testosterone blockers and you start you know, taking estrogen. And she said, we didn't discuss it. I said, well, there's nothing to discuss. This is something I need to do for me. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, now we're getting a divorce. And I knew the answer, but I said, why? And she said to me, oh, you're going to develop breasts and, you know, Lord knows what else you're going to do, implying the surgery. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I'm not a lesbian. And I'm not going to be married to a woman, so we're getting divorced. I said, okay. It was about 3 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. She said to me, it's really good you moved out of the house and did this on your own, because you never would have transitioned as well staying married with me.
Oh.
And I said, thank you. I knew that. And that's why I totally agreed to the divorce, and let's just move forward with our lives. We're friends.
Oh, good. Okay.
We parted on good company.
Hmm.
And it's basically that's basically part of my past.
And she is in your life to a certain degree.
Right.
But what had to happen, happened.
Right.
And you're both doing okay.
I had done all my internal work of working on my mind, changing my beliefs, changing my image, beginning to work on my self-awareness, and really a lot of self-acceptance work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had to also begin deconstructing all the male socialization that happens throughout life, and start learning how to mannerisms and behaviors that are subtle for women.
Yeah, it's something I don't think about much, just because
nobody does. It's
right,
because it just is. That's the thing about gender. It just is.
Yeah.
And it's not something that is physical on you. It's in your mind. It's in your brain. It's the way you're wired.
It just is. I love that. You're so right. And that is so like deep and profound when you really think about it. It just is. I don't think about being a girl. I don't think anything about it. I just am.
Exactly.
It's who I am. I've never had to fight it.
Right. So part of being able to do this is now I'm just being.
For the first time after 67 years.
Yep. One of the family friends came out in college as gay. And his parents were very accepting and all of that. It worked out fine. He was the first person I came out to.
Oh, really? Oh.
Outside of the family, he was the first one. I said to him, Bill, are you familiar with, you know, LGBT? He goes, yeah. I said, well, you're one of the G's, right? Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a T.
Oh, that's fun. What did he say? What did he do?
He goes, what? No. Really?
Yeah.
Never saw that coming.
Yeah.
Aww. I hid it very well. My male facsimile hated clothes shopping. My wife would drag me out. She'd be, you want this, you want that, you know, you'd look good in this. And she goes, you're not here, are you? And I said, no. You want to be over there. And she pointed to the women's section and go, yeah. This never goes away.
Mm-mm.
And
no.
Our gay friend came to lunch with his partner. We're sitting there at the kitchen table. Bill looks at me and goes, Wendy, it would be so much easier if you were gay. You could leave the house. No one would know. You wouldn't have to change your wardrobe. You wouldn't have to learn all of these other things. I said, yeah, I know, but that's who I am, and I'm going with it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I got done doing my mental preparation for this, which I think is so key for anybody doing this, is work on your mind first.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything else just flows.
Mm-hmm.
My wife at the time said to me, I'm upset. I'm, you know, anxious about all of this that's going on. Then she also said something which I found rather ironic. Her first husband left her for another woman. Her second husband left her to become a woman. I couldn't help but laugh. The irony of it. And she said, it makes me angry. You're so happy and excited to do this. And I'm so upset. And I know that's the effect that it has. And but that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And you did your part. You tried. You tried so hard.
I left the house. The moving company came, got my stuff, all to take it to my apartment. It was 10 o'clock in the morning when I got there. I look around. I ran in. Nobody saw me. The moving company came, brought my stuff. I closed the door, took off my last male representative clothing, put it in the bag to go donate. Mm-hmm. And put on a denim skirt, fixed myself up, little top, sandals, and I went grocery shopping.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Freedom.
I couldn't have been happier. First time I signed my name was for a store discount card at the grocery store.
I want to get into, you know, what you're doing now, you know, how your experience has brought you to the work you're doing now to help mm-hmm. others. But before that, I want to ask what happened with your daughter? How did your daughter take it?
She went through the University of Pennsylvania with got a master's in psychology, works as a counselor in the Philadelphia School District. Uh-huh. And I thought she would have totally gotten this.
Right.
Well, she did. But I told her on a February night, we sat, I talked for an hour and a half. She didn't really answer, ask any questions or anything. There was no conversation. She left to go take care of the kids. And I tried for about 4 days to connect with her to see how she was doing. And she didn't connect. When we finally did connect, I said, you know, I thought you of all people would have understood this because you studied this in school, I assume. Yes, yeah. We did. But you were my dad. And that was the end of that conversation.
Oh.
I get it. What I did hurt her.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's very difficult about doing this is it's also difficult on family.
Yeah.
Family basically has to get to a point where they probably need therapy to deal with this as well. That's one of the other things is I went through 2 years of going to therapy at least every other week. Mm-hmm. Then I branched, went to once a month, and I did that for 5 years total. I encouraged both my ex-wife and my daughter to go to therapy, and I don't believe they ever did. I know my wife did at one time. She tried, but it didn't work out for her. She didn't think she needed it. Mm-hmm. So there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. And so you don't really have a relationship with your daughter at this point.
No. The door's open, but it's been difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a price to pay, and it's not fair.
That's the other thing, too, is that when people do stay together, the family has to actually make adjustments, not just for the pronouns, the name, or the appearance, the presentation. It's the roles within the family dynamic. Mm-hmm. There are things that I used to do around the house as a guy. 6 years on estrogen, no way. Not happening. It just doesn't work. I don't have the physical strength I had.
Oh, wow.
I also don't have the desire, or that's just not me anymore.
Right, right.
A lot changes. And it also is definitely within the family dynamics of who you are and what you are. And the other thing that I had no idea of going through this, I think I had a couple of therapy sessions before I went in for surgery. I said to Steph, I have no idea what my sexual orientation is.
Right.
I wasn't happy with it before, but I was supposed to be with women. So that's what I did.
Check that box.
Check that box. That's what I did. I checked the boxes. But after surgery, I don't know. This is a whole new experience. New body, yeah. New parts, everything. Steph, and I'll never forget this either. And she was absolutely right. And I've applied it to other things throughout my life. You'll know what it is when you're ready.
There it is. Yeah.
It's how I feel at the time. Surgery on August 31st, I believe it was, in 2017. Healing up and everything else. Dr. Bluebon looks at me and she goes, well, you're ready for sex. Meaning I was healed. You know what I said back? You got anyone in mind?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh.
I had no idea. I thought about it and everything else. The next thing is I found myself on Match.
Oh, look at you. Okay.
I started dating between 2018 and 2020. Uh-huh. I dated 6 different guys.
Okay. So you were figuring it out.
I was figuring it out. Sex as a woman is amazing.
I am so happy for you. Oh, that's awesome. Yay.
It's definitely been a journey and an experience. I've actually kind of done a fairly decent job of figuring out what I want in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I have standards.
As you should. Atta girl. Yeah.
This has been a completely different life, a rebirth, as it were. And the other benefit of going through this, my doctor said to me, my primary care doctor looked at me, I think it was my 3rd year or so. He said, what's going on with you? My blood work used to be horrible. Cholesterol, triglycerides, all kinds of other stuff going on. I was type 2 diabetic and I weighed 70 pounds more than I do now.
Oh, whoa.
That was my male representative. He was a mess, physically and emotionally.
Wow, that is pretty amazing.
Now my blood work comes back perfect. I haven't been type 2 diabetic in 4 or 5 years.
Holy shit, Wendy.
It's all because I looked at the doctor and I said, it starts with being happy.
Words to live by right there.
I'm not churning up the anxiety and releasing all the emotional stress every day on my body, on my organs, everything. I'm very grounded, very happy, very emotionally okay. I have my moments. We all do because we're human.
That's just freaking beautiful. And I'm so happy for you. And you know, I hope whoever hasn't come around comes around eventually. And I just see a bright future for you. You got a bright future ahead of you. Who cares what age you started at? Here you are.
It's never too late. And I'm not done living yet.
You're not.
No.
Yeah. Now that's a perfect segue here. Now you're using your powers to help others. Mm-hmm. You're using your experiences to help others. Can you tell everybody at home about what you do and how people could possibly get in touch with you and learn from you?
I work with people who have had trauma, abuse issues in their past. They're having difficulty making life changes constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly believe that you can really benefit your emotional well-being, your physical health, just by learning to embrace change.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fight it and learn to just go with the flow of it. And a lot of that has to do with how we see ourselves, our emotions, how we learn to handle our emotions. We have thousands and thousands of thoughts going through our brains every day.
Mm-hmm.
And those all trigger emotions. And they tell us what we can and what we can't do. And mm-hmm. what I've learned through this and what I hope others learn to do is rewrite those stories, turn those voices around so that they're supportive and you can do what you need to do for yourself.
Mm. One of my favorite quotes that I say to myself a lot is, you are the thinker, you are not the thought. You are the thinker.
Mm-hmm.
You are in control.
Yep.
You're in control of those thoughts.
I started working with people in the transgender community who were transitioning. And then I found that a lot of the mindset type work that I do to help them go through this process applies to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's a different way of looking at life and living. And that's what I help people experience and change.
I think you need to have a TED Talk. I think you need to tell your story. I think everybody needs to hear your story because I think it can resonate so deeply. And I think all parents need to hear your story. And it's leaving me with such, I don't know how to explain it, but like this sense of empathy and understanding that I know now when I'm faced with something possibly that could be difficult, I can think back to your story and what you said, like use me as the example of what not to be.
Right.
I'm going to think of your story a lot as a way to keep me on the path that I need to be on in order to be the authentic person that I want to be.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Makes total sense, Jamie.
So you are basically a transition coach.
I refer to myself as a transition mentor.
I love it. Any kind of transition because transitions are hard in nature.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's no transition Olympics. There's no one is harder than the other. I mean,
what I did is not much, doesn't involve much more than what someone else is going to experience going through a whole other life transition. All life changes begin and are between your ears. 80% between your ears.
I love it. So where can everybody find you?
MeetWendyCole.com.
That will be in the show notes and all the ways to reach Wendy will be in the show notes.
There they can schedule time with me or subscribe to my newsletter. And there's a link on there to my other website, which I consider my brochure site. It has all kinds of information about me, about what I do. It has my blog and it also has my media page where I put the podcasts and any other appearances that I do.
Everybody find Wendy, support Wendy, give Wendy all the love. And I am just honored that you came and talked to me. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, Jamie. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm glad to meet you, really.
Me too. And you know, this is never goodbye. Okay. You're a part of the queer fam squad now, as I like to say. So we queers got to stick together.
There you go. Act. Absolutely.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.